Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9. I'm here with my cousin Seth. We're named the same.
Yeah, who would have thought?
I know. There's like two Seths in the world, and we're here today. We're in Building 28, and I thought we'd talk a little bit about credential theft and how do we protect against that in Windows 10. So why don't we get started with credential theft in general? What is that?
Okay, so credential theft is stealing credentials. Mm-hmm. And credentials are what you use to log into a computer, access your email, that sort of thing. And bad guys like to steal these because then they can pretend to be you.
I see.
And it's a pretty big deal. And there have been some really high profile attacks. And my favorite one I like to point out is something called Carbonac Group. So it's this thing called Carbonac Group, and it was really like, it was like the plot of Superman 3 or something, right? Where these guys went and broke into banks all over the world, and they did it by stealing credentials. And they actually set up ATMs to dump out money at set times.
Oh my goodness.
These dudes would know, go to somewhere in London at this time, withdraw $20 and you'd really get like 200.
They stole
about $1 billion.
And they did that just by stealing credentials?
That was how they infiltrated systems.
Oh, I see.
And then once you steal some credentials, you can break into a computer, and from there you can steal more and break into more computers, and it's like this branching effect.
So when people are thinking about credential theft, I mean, for me, it's just like someone stole my username and password. Right. But it's much more nuanced than that, isn't it?
It's like a gateway that they use to get into more interesting things.
I see.
So they probably don't want the Seths, right? Mm-hmm. We're not that interesting.
No, I'm not really.
But they might want to steal information off of our computers and from there maybe get to more interesting stuff.
I see. And the way they do that is just by stealing passwords, or is there other ways to do it?
There's lots of things they steal. So there's kind of this umbrella that credential theft covers, and there's pass the hash attacks where they pass hashes of passwords. Mm-hmm. There's pass the key and pass the ticket. Those are Kerberos protocol targeted attacks. Mm-hmm. And then there's pass the pass, which is just stealing your password.
I see. And so stealing a password is pretty simple. Someone guesses your password, or you use the same password everywhere,
right,
or they use some kind of email to get you to log in, mm-hmm, fake phishing to get your password. But those other ones seemed more technical, like pass the hash or pass the ticket. Can you describe what those are?
So what these guys do is they scan the memory in your computer for those credentials and steal them.
I see.
So the way this usually happens is, for example, you might be on Facebook and you get a fake friend request or something, and they get you to run some malware, a Trojan or something. And if you're an administrator on your system, you have access to reading all the memory, which means the thing you ran from the attacker can read all the memory.
I see.
So they can harvest all these things. And what makes it so valuable is if there are two Seths logged onto the system and they get one of us, and I'm administrator, for example, they can now pop you. You're owned, and they've got your stuff. And now they can go to any computer system you can log into, and they can start getting other people.
Oh,
and they build like a collection of credentials, really.
So two things. One is dumping a memory is an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, does the operating system store our passwords?
We don't store the password. We actually try to get rid of it as soon as we can.
Yeah.
But the problem is really a feature, and that is you don't want to keep typing in your password or mm-hmm scanning a fingerprint or entering something. So the computer remembers things that let it act as you on the network.
I see.
So in the classical Windows domain sense, those things would be your hash of your password, which is what NTLM protocol uses.
Okay.
And then there's, for Kerberos, there are keys and tickets. And the bad guy wants to steal those. And then they can replay those elsewhere.
So as an administrator, you'd have to be pretty specific as a hacker. How do you know what memory to actually get? And how do you know that is actually the ticket or the hash or whatever?
Well, people just reverse engineered and figured out our code.
I
effectively
see.
So there are off-the-shelf tools. One of them is Mimikatz, mm-hmm, which it's M-I-M-I-K-A-T-Z, mm-hmm, if anyone wants to search it. It's really well known. And the guy who wrote that's not really like a black hat hacker guy. He was just curious and like wanted to learn C coding and wanted to learn. And he was like a security interested guy. And he was like, well, how does Windows do this stuff? And he wrote this tool, which became like one of the most well-known. So you can just go download it, and I've used it to demonstrate things, and you just run a command and it spits out all the hashes and keys of people on the system.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so obviously this is a huge problem.
Yes.
If someone can log in as me to my machine and I'm administrator, they can start harvesting other users, start getting all your information on your organization and start dumping out money of ATMs, like you mentioned before. Yeah. So I know we were going to talk about isolated user mode. Let's talk about isolated user mode for a second, and then let's see how we can sort of protect against those things with isolated user mode.
Okay, sure. So
let's do it.
Whiteboard it up. So I know Dave Probert talked in another talk in more detail, so I'm not going to go super detailed here. But isolated user mode is effectively breaking down the classic model of the operating system, where you've got user mode, normal user mode, you're running all your apps and whatnot up here, like, say, I don't know, Word,
right,
or what have you's running. And then down here, we've got kernel. So kernel, of course, is where device drivers go and where the I/O all really happens. And there's some communication between these. And the idea is you try to keep bad guys out of here. So if bad guy attacks Word, okay, he can crash Word, but he can't steal other stuff. But it turns out, in principle, history's taught us we can't keep bad guys out of here.
You can write a driver to start doing crazy things.
That's exactly what the guy who wrote Mimikatz, Benjamin Delpy, did. So we put in some protections, and it blocked him, and he was like, okay, fine, I'll write a driver. And it was like weeks later, he had a driver. And
oh my goodness.
It's kind of embarrassing. But you know, it's because we didn't look at the problem. We assume no one could get here, but people can get here.
Well, here's the thing. Like, this, for me, and I mentioned this in an earlier video, this to me was like sacred space. Everything here was perfect all the time.
Right.
What was what we assumed from the user mode code that we were writing.
Right, exactly. And that was the assumption we had for a long time.
Yeah.
And we decided, but that's clearly not realistic. Let's rethink it. And that's where isolated user mode really comes in, which effectively, I like to think of it as like a 2x2 grid. So you've got normal over here. So now I'm going to call this side, I'm going to draw this bigger. So this is your normal world, where everything lives. It's Windows OS like we've always known it. And then over here, we have secure world. And that's where the isolation is. So here, we have the same concepts. We have a user mode and a kernel mode. And the difference is this is isolated user mode. And isolated kernel mode, and they are hard isolated with the hypervisor. So we now use the hypervisor as our true root. It's not the kernel anymore. We've moved it down closer to hardware. Hypervisor's thinner, and the hypervisor keeps bad guys out of our secure world now.
Using the SLAT to say which memory you can access and write and read, et cetera.
Right, we use SLAT for the memory. For the page tables, for the paging, and we use IOMMU to prevent things like a rogue graphics driver from being able to slurp. Because graphics, like your graphics cards that everybody has in every computer anymore, what makes them fast is they can slurp up huge chunks of memory, physical memory. So you need IOMMU to be able to block those guys as well.
I see, and this is something we hadn't talked about before, so that's something else that's happening in the secure kernel.
Right.
It's making sure to block access to actually physical devices that someone might have written a rogue driver for to start sucking out memory.
Effectively, yeah, you can't tell. It adds a layer above or in between, you could think, the RAM and, say, your graphics card.
I see.
So the graphics card can't really see all physical RAM. There's an extra layer in there that says, no, you can't see this, and yes, you can see that.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Yeah. So let's talk about then how we protect against theft in secure mode.
Okay. So what we have done here, we can go with this diagram, is in the past, we don't really worry too much about Word. It doesn't have the stuff people want. But in past Windows and in Windows 10, we have a process over here called LSAS. It's the Local Security Authority Subsystem.
Yep.
I think that's what it stands for. And so LSAS, that's where all the goodies are. So I like to use red for the bad guy. So you got bad guy over here.
Angry, obviously.
Yeah, he wants your stuff, man. So he's coming in here and he's stealing your password hashes, your Kerberos keys. That's what he's stealing, and he wants to take those and replay them on other systems.
And in the example, they wrote a driver that has access to the memory space in user mode, which LSAS lives in, and it starts dumping the memory out or the pages that LSAS has access to.
Right, and so LSAS can run effectively as a normal process, but it's access controlled. so not everybody can read it. Mm-hmm. But if you're an administrator, you can break all this.
Got it.
Right. We did something called PPL, Protected Process Lite, which kept administrator out of things. However, then you just write a driver, and actually all the driver does is flips a bit. It's really not that fancy. You make it sound cooler than it is. It's actually, all the driver does is goes, nope, he's not protected anymore, and then you've turned off.
Wow.
Because if you think about it, it's really just a switch in the kernel.
Yeah, of course, of course.
So what we've done is we're assuming bad guy can get here. Anything we do in here to protect this, bad guy can, he can subvert that as well. So now in isolated user mode, you have processes. We call them trustlets.
Right.
Because they're trusted processes. And we have one over here called CredGuard.
That would be lsaiso.exe.
Lsaiso.exe currently. It could be credguard.exe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, because we're trying to get the branding consistent. So, and so what we've got here is an RPC channel between LSAS and CredGuard.
Okay.
And so what we've done is we've taken the keys and interesting things that are inside of, or used to be inside of LSAS. We now encrypt them or derive them inside of CredGuard. And they're only ever clear, plain text, plain readable keys and whatnot inside this process.
So LSAS doesn't even know what they are anymore.
LSAS may have a copy of them, but he only ever has an encrypted copy.
I see.
So that's what we've done, is we've got some keys over here that are only usable inside a secure world. And there's some crypto facilities provided by secure kernel. So there's even additional protection from there's the user kernel divide over here, just like there is over here.
I see.
And we use those facilities to encrypt things, because sometimes we do need to pass something back, just kind of like a handle to pass around mm-hmm. and use, but it's never usable over here. So whenever it needs to be used, it needs to be sent along with the data that needs to be operated on to user mode, or to isolated user mode. And in CredGuard, we validate all the inputs. We make sure it looks like valid stuff is happening.
I see.
And then we'll decrypt the secret. And then we'll make sure that secret is being used for the right purpose. We actually mark all our secrets. And then we'll do the operations, such as a signing operation or an HMAC to prove your identity.
I see. So that's interesting. Let's take a step back, because sure. it feels like I remember doing the interview with Dave Probert, but I don't remember as much why it's actually protected here. So maybe you can talk about why it's protected here as opposed to why it's not here.
Sure. So we've basically stopped anybody from doing anything in secure mode, because we don't have a user. We don't really have users over here at all. So there's no sense of an administrator user. There is no debugging support in the ship code. It takes like custom built test sign binaries and everything that you can't run on a normal ship system. So there's no debugger access. And memory dumps and things are encrypted using keys over here. So what we've done is we've taken multiple steps to ensure that nobody can attach to any of these processes. No one can read the memory, because the hypervisor
is preventing read access.
That. He's preventing any access of the memory over here. And you can't crash it and say force a memory dump, because it's an encrypted memory dump. It's encrypted with the key that we have very well guarded. I believe it takes like two guys entering the room. It's like launching.
The big red button. Beep.
Yeah, you have to physically go over there. There's no way to do it.
And both of their names are Seth. Mm. No, that's not true. That's not true.
There's only two of us.
So it's blocking access to the credential guard. What other things are being stored in the credential guard? Is it just hashes and keys?
We actually store very, very little here. It's mostly stateless. So LSAS actually keeps, he has the encrypted form of everything. And so he's mostly a stateless service. 99%, I'd say, stateless. We want to make it a little more robust that way.
I see.
So, and that allowed us to keep LSAS, it allowed us to reduce the amount of change in LSAS.
I see.
Because it's a very old component. It's been there since, I don't know, NT, I think, effectively. So we wanted to make sure that it still ran the same way on and off.
Got it.
The difference is, for some operations, we send the data over to this guy who's got mm-hmm. the secret keys, hidden keys.
So let's go through the process, because we went through the process of the bad guy mm-hmm. Trying to access LSAS memory,
sure.
Being able to do it some way, or trying to go through a driver and being able to do it. Now let's talk about the bad guy trying it with Credential Guard on, and let's see how the rejections are happening. What are some ways that the bad guy is going to try to get them, and how is secure user mode going to help, or isolated user mode going
to
help?
So one thing you might try to do is, one thing that I've tried, just because it's muscle memory, is attach a kernel debugger. And then you try to dive into the process in the kernel debugger, and you just flat out get denied. You get many, many access violations because the memory addresses don't look legitimate.
I see.
So you only have access to the memory address ranges that this side of the wall can see.
And so what you're going to do is if you're doing pen testing in that regard, you're going to get all of LSAS's encrypted keys
right.
in the memory. And given modern computation, you're going to have a hard time decrypting it.
Yeah, I hesitate to ever say impossible, right? Yeah. But we use 256-bit AES with a strongly generated key over here. That's really, really strong crypto.
Okay.
So, and the key is generated. It's unique. It's different on every machine. And we use Secure Boot. And we use a TPM to try to ensure no one's breaking into our pre-boot environment and everything to make sure that key really does make it to secure mode.
I see.
And it's not accessible ever to normal.
So the first way was you attach to the debugger. You try to attach your debugger to the kernel. It's not going to work. Next is bad guy is going to try to write some kind of driver. So what happens there in that case?
I mean, the driver is no different. The driver simply cannot see this memory. It shows up as he'll get access violations or just get told that's not valid memory. It's as if the memory doesn't exist to this side of the world.
I see. So anytime you have a secret in Windows 10 using the secure kernel, it's always going to be encrypted on the access side.
Right.
It's always going to be protected on the secure side.
Right. Anything that we need, and we have to ensure that any operations we provide have to be paranoid in nature. Yeah. So they really need to validate all inputs. They need to ensure that the secrets are being used correctly because we wanted to prevent what we call Oracle access. So, for example, smart cards. So you might have a smart card. And with a smart card, bad guy can't steal the key off of it, mm-hmm. right? Which is similar to this. However, if bad guy can use the smart card to do signing operations, they might be able to get other things, like other artifacts out of the protocol that they can use.
I see.
And that's what a lot of these attacks do, is they don't really need to, that's what the pass the key attack with Kerberos says, is the attacker doesn't have to steal your smart card as long as he can steal that key, because that key may be good for 10 days.
Yeah.
And these guys need like hours,
right?
right? So we're really careful not to provide these sorts of oracles here either. So operations aren't things like, oh, just sign this arbitrary thing for me. We would never allow that. Instead, we have an operation which is, here are these well-known inputs. It's, you know, username, things like domain. Mm-hmm. And then we will form a request over here for the protocol and hand that fully formed request back.
I see. So you're doing some checking on the way, when you're traversing the normal secure mode, you're doing a lot of checking. You're making sure the buffers aren't trying to be
right.
overflowed. You're making sure that they're passing in the right amount of parameters into the functions. Mm-hmm. And you're making sure that the parameters being passing, and sometimes they're just pointers, you're trying to make sure that the memory in there is okay.
Right, it's all RPC as well. So we actually have to, everything gets marshaled up and then passed over, then unpacked over here.
I see.
And so since everything is typically signed, it's you're doing proofs. Right, to prove your identity with your credential. Once you hand it back, the attacker can't manipulate it. He can't manipulate that blob because then he's going to break the signature on it.
And once the signature is broken?
It's the domain controller who the bad guy wants to pass it to is going to reject it.
Got it.
Because it doesn't match the signature doesn't match the payload anymore.
So now, is secure mode something that is in all flavors of Windows or is it in specific versions of Windows?
It's new to Windows 10. Mm-hmm. And we've had people ask about backporting, but the backport is effectively upgrading to Windows 10 because it's new kernel components, hypervisor components, really the guts of the OS were sort of rearranged a bit to get this functionality in.
Of course, man.
So Windows 10 client has isolated user mode support and credential guard. And then in order for us to provide sort of security promises, there's additional configuration and whatnot that has to happen. And your domain controller needs to be a 2012 R2 domain controller. Because we use, we've got a prompts we can build up. Maybe we should talk about that a little bit.
Yeah,
because we've got the base technology, which is bad guy can't see the secrets. However, one of the problems is how do you prove that, for example, bad guy didn't come along and just turn it off?
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's like we know there are ways to do that, for example. So what prevents the attacker from simply changing the configuration on your system so your users think they're in the clear, and now their stuff's getting stolen every time they log in?
I see. Because there's an aspect of, because it, I could see how it's all secure on the system, but there's an aspect of communicating with other machines too,
right,
that somehow needs to be protected. Can you speak to how that's protected?
Right. It's a kind of a new picture.
Yeah,
so,
let's do it.
Yeah, I'll give this one. So starting with 2012 R2, I believe it was 2012 R2, a new feature was added called authentication policies.
Okay.
So an authentication policy is simply something you can apply to a user that says these certain things need to happen. That sounds really generic, but it's meant to be sort of a generic thing. One of the things we can do, which we leverage, is we say, you, Seth, may only log in from, say, these machines.
I see.
So we can effectively bind you to a certain set of machines. So what we have is, I'll go back kind of to the cube and say, actually, that's a bad drawing. So we'll say we've got LSAS.
Okay.
So, and he's talking to, I'm going to put some stuff in Credential Guard here to show you the kinds of things we're protecting specifically. So he talks to CredGuard, right? So what we've done in Windows 10 is we've added a machine key. So this is the root of how we prove you're coming from a safe system.
Okay.
So what we do is we have a domain controller out here, and that's who you're authenticating to. So this machine authenticates using the machine key to the domain controller. And that's the first step.
Okay.
So what happens when the machine authenticates with the key is an additional claim, for lack of a better word, a SID, gets added to the machine's token. So the machine itself logs onto the domain, and now the machine has something that indicates, ah, I logged on with this key, this trusted key. So you know the machine is logging in because with this key, because this key is only inside a CredGuard. LSAS can only use it through CredGuard to do this authentication step.
And when it's authenticating, though, it's having to go over the wire. How do you protect the machine key as it goes over the wire?
Well, you don't ever send a key over the wire.
Okay.
You sign something. You just sign a proof.
Okay.
So we'll sign a proof that says, hey, I'm signing this with my private key. Here's my proof. That goes over the wire. The domain controller checks the proof with the public part of the key. So he has the public key. And then once that's happened, he can send the information back to the machine.
Got it.
And now the machine has a SID, security identifier, which says, verily, I authenticated with the machine key.
Got it.
Things are good. So that's the first step. And that's something we added in Windows 10, is this client authentication with the key. So now, let's say a Seth comes along, because there's so many of them.
That's right.
They're everywhere. They're happy guys.
That's right.
So Seth comes along and wants to authenticate to this domain controller. So now this domain controller has an authentication policy configured for this user. And that authentication policy says, this user may only ever authenticate from a machine with that SID we were talking about.
I see.
So now, what ends up happening is it's actually based off of a RFC 6113. It's amazing bedtime reading.
No, oh yeah.
Where it's fascinating. It's sad that I have these numbers memorized.
Nice.
And it provides a facility that we use here whereby we basically take the machine's authentication, that credential, and the user's authentication, and we compound it or we combine it. And we create this combined key. And then we do the user auth that way. So we combine them. And since we've combined them, and we've got a way to cryptographically prove that the combination actually happened, the domain controller can check that proof. He knows that it used user's credential, and it used the machine's logon, and the machine logged on with the trusted key.
Yeah.
I know this. Mm-hmm. So therefore, yes, you can log on. So what that allows us to do is if bad guy comes along and just turns this whole thing off, it falls apart because the machine no longer has a key.
I see.
The machine can't log on to the domain. If the machine can't log on to the domain, this step can never happen.
And essentially you can't do it.
Yeah, and from a protocol perspective, bad guy could trick this user into, say, using their smart card or a thumb swipe or something like that. But the domain controller will not accept that request. And what the bad guys are interested in stealing is the stuff that comes back. So we're preventing that stuff from ever coming back from the domain controller. And we're nipping these attacks.
It's the token or the key or the hash or whatever the domain controller
exactly.
gives. I see. And so it's never going to be able to respond affirmative because they turned off the credential guard. The SID's no longer there. Even if I log on and the bad guy came in, snooped in, you know, with the mask and turned it off, and I go in there and log on and they're trying to monitor what I'm doing, it won't let me log on because they turned it off.
You actually get a surprisingly helpful message. It says something like your authentication policy says you may not log on from this system. So it's saying you can't log on from here. That's the message.
And so when you call the support desk, they're going to be like, someone's trying to hack you.
Hopefully they will recognize this, right? If this is being deployed, that should be something they would recognize as a sign of a, you know, sometimes things happen, but it's probably you're under attack. That's its sign.
Or you went into the BIOS and changed something you shouldn't have.
You did something goofy, yeah.
I see. So that makes sense. So now we're saying you can't get stuff out of credential guard if you're a bad guy.
Right.
By trying to sniff memory or pull stuff out through a fake driver. And now, even if you turn that off, there's no way to get the trick the user to authenticate properly. So you can't get it from the machine's memory, and you can't get it from the domain controller. Essentially, you need to move on to someone that's using a different operating system.
Yeah, you need to attack someone with a weaker configuration, right? And we're not, one thing that I think is really cool about this is we're not relying on the user to do something crazy, right?
Yeah.
You just keep using the system like you did, and you've got these additional protections. We're not asking you to make 15 character passwords with four languages. And you know, no one can remember these passwords. We're saying start using smart cards. That's one of the things we want people to use is smart cards, or I believe it's Windows Passport, uh-huh. Microsoft Passport. These are much stronger authenticators. They're not password-based.
I see.
So that's really one of the things you need to do is start using these stronger credentials to authenticate. Because we want to take the onus off the user.
Sure.
Because that's a dead end, we kind of feel.
And it's kind of cool that isolated user mode makes it so that none of these things can ever be stolen because of the way that it's doing second-level address translation and making sure that you can't read that memory.
I hesitate to say never stolen, right?
Yeah.
I feel our architecture is really sound. And we had, there was a third party, non-Microsoft affiliated, Alex Ionescu did a talk at Black Hat. He even said independently, he spent months trying to crack this thing. He says it looks really good. But what we've done really is push the attack surface further down.
I see.
So now I feel like we'll probably start to see people trying to attack our hypervisor where maybe that wasn't happening before.
Interesting.
So we've fixed a lot of problems and I think we've done some really good stuff. But we're going to see people attacking hypervisors, and already you see it at the tech conferences, the security conferences this year. People are attacking the hardware and firmware.
Oh.
So people are attacking the firmware, like baked into your notebook or baked into your PC, and that's really where the attacks are starting to happen now.
Because you're moving it away from the OS, and so now it needs to happen like at the hard. Because SLAT address is a hardware thing.
Right.
And if you're putting a new piece of machinery in there, it's going to have some supervisor type access.
Effectively. Yeah. And it's something that every operating system running on that hardware is equally vulnerable if the firmware on that device is a bug. It doesn't matter if you're running Windows or Linux or Mac OS. It doesn't matter. If that guy owns the hardware and he owns it at, say, like the UEFI, UEFI mm-hmm. layer, they're just below the operating system.
Yeah, there's something you
right. Know. There's so that's really where I'm expecting the attack surface to be shifting.
Well, awesome. Yeah. This has been super informative, Seth.
Cool.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching. We've been learning a little bit about credential theft and how isolated user mode protects against that. Thanks for watching again, and we'll see you next time. Take care.